This is Radio Equal Shot with your host, Alex Smith.
An insurance company expert ballparked property losses in Florida to reach $250 billion after Hurricanes Helene and Milton. Only about $5 billion of that is covered by private companies. The majority of Florida property owners are not covered by any flood insurance at all. People already living close to the line, including working families and millions of seniors, will be wiped out. Those without relatives or resources may become homeless unless some kind of temporary camps emerge from the government. That kind of happened with the FEMA trailers after Hurricane Katrina. Others, though, will leave the state and start over somewhere else. They are climb migrants, as Patrick Marchman calls them. Marchman has a master's degree in marine affairs from the University of Washington. He is a certified environmental planner. Patrick is a member of the Agenda Setters for the Climb Migration Network. Patrick Marchman, a warm welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
It was frightening to see piles of debris roadside from Hurricane Helene, and less than 2 weeks later, a lot of that became airborne projectiles in Milton's winds. It is a bit hard to comprehend what just happened. How do you make sense of these compound climate threats?
That's a good question. I think you used the right phrase, compound climate threats. These are just sort of the 1-2 punches. You're having events happen pretty quickly, one after the other, and it's almost as if you don't really have time to repair, to recuperate, or to do much else except hunker down. And unfortunately, this is the kind of thing that's to be expected to increase.
And they had a similar thing, I think, in Houston. They had a big hurricane, floods all over the place, kind of a mess, and then a heat wave. And, of course, the power was out for thousands, hundreds of thousands of people and no AC. So these things can combine like that. Are you ready, Patrick, to make any predictions on what will unfold for Florida communities that were hit by Hurricanes Helene and Milton? Will they try to rebuild with just the same and no adaptation?
It's very early. It's hard to always tell, but I think generally, unfortunately, yes. There's going to be largely an attempt to rebuild to whatever was there before. I think there'll be attempts here and there to adapt. There'll be some good ones, but I think in general, people are just going to try to get back to where they are, and unfortunately, they're going to be supported in that by a lot of policy and the infrastructure.
Well, as an environmental planner, what's the alternative?
There's a couple of angles. Number one, it's really to start thinking seriously about how people live on the landscape. And that's going to mean, in some places, low-lying areas. Elevating homes is going to mean burying infrastructure, and it's going to mean some people really should, probably not be there long-term. I think, in other ways, it'll mean lots of trying to work on hardening the power systems. You mentioned before sort of power outages. That's a real concern, especially as temperatures increase. People die from that. And so having microgrids and such that make overall power systems harder to knock out would be a very good thing to do. And the final thing, I think, really encouraging people to know each other and to check on each other. The most basic form of resilience, probably the most effective form, is community. And so, of course, in the Western world, we're having a problem with that in most places these days. But people knowing their neighbors, checking on them, having places they can go, there's really no real substitute for that. Something I would recommend very highly.
Yes, that's a great point, because we so often think of technical solutions. All right, we'll make houses on stilts that float up and down as they did in the Netherlands or something. But really, it is the human community that we need to work on. And right now in the United States and in other countries, it's kind of divided, and people haven't been talking to each other and don't even like each other if they're in the other party. So we've got to overcome that if we're going to deal with climate change, I think. And there's another aspect here for business. I mean, hurricanes cost a lot more than property damage. Among the hidden costs I noted, Port Tampa Bay, a major shipping hub, closed for days during these storms. The big cruise lines canceled out. The tourists fled. Disney World shut all their operations. Goldman Sachs calculated Hurricane Milton will cost Disney somewhere between $100 and $200 million in earnings. So climate change is costing big business big money. Are you seeing the signs that corporations are becoming more aware of the risk and maybe trying to get ready?
That's complicated. There are signs that they're becoming more aware, especially in the past couple of years. I've been personally heartened by seeing companies looking into climate adaptation as a specific thing. It's new. There's a lot of people, a lot of times they don't really know how to articulate it, but it's there. However, it's still really sort of the minority opinion. The general short-termism of sort of late capitalism has an incentive structure to, you know, try to make your money, get the money and run. You see that a lot of times in places like, frankly, Miami. You know, people know, at this point, we all kind of know the future, and yet there's a bit of a game of musical chairs in terms of, you know, the real estate industry and such. The other thing I think, you know, I wanted to kind of bring up when we're talking about business is there's a concept which I've been really interested in the past few years called sort of, and I call it sort of manager treat death spiral. It's a little dramatic, but basically it's the idea that it's not just moving people around, and we're talking about moving people here and there, but it has real impacts on the structure of municipal finance and such. And so when there's simply, you know, when more damage and fewer people to pay for it, that gets harder to repair the damage earlier, and you get into a spiral of these sort of things. And so the insurance industry is a massive player in this as well. But we're talking just in general resources. And so a business has a big part in that too. Eventually business decides to stop throwing good money after bad, and they will start pulling out to places where the money is safer.
Well, you've managed big budget government programs, and you sometimes advise private companies. What is it that you're doing? What is your role here?
My role is, so I've been doing a lot of things recently. As you mentioned earlier, I was part of the Climate Action Network leadership for a long time. You know, I've done a lot of things, I've spoken in places. I've been very gratified to have that opportunity. What I'm doing a lot right now is I'm working a lot with small, mid-sized cities and tribes and communities, both in, you know, California and throughout the Midwest and places, really working with them on a really direct level, working on different, you know, plans, climate adaptation, hazard mitigation plans and such. It's really interesting to zero down and talk to these organizations, talk to these jurisdictions, seeing what people are concerned about. Because I think that's, I've also worked with a few companies directly that, you know, one I can think of was a largely remote first company, and they had a whole different set of problems, which is how do you run a remote first company in an age of, say, you know, climate shocks? Because we talk about the internet, for instance, the internet is actually physically based. It's physical wires, physical servers. We don't think about that a lot, but when they go down, there is no internet. And so what do you do about that? So I think, you know, amount of conversations I've had, it comes as a shock sometimes, but it's good if people, you know, when you get some of the politics out of it, you know, just keep it down to like, okay, here's the realities, what kind of impacts are coming, and what can we do about it? There, people are receptive more often than you think.
You know, I think your field is going to really blossom in the next few years, certainly the next decade, because we see that companies can be very mobile if it saves them money. I mean, headquarters and factories do move from one state to another. Boeing did it. Do you foresee company migration, say, out of Florida or Houston to higher ground, further inland?
Absolutely. It just depends on when that's going to happen. I would say one example, I think there's actually been studies now, which is one of the interesting things in the past 5 years, you're starting to see studies and indications that, you know, things are happening. It's not speculation. There was one, I forget the name of it, mentioning, I think, in the state of Nevada in the U.S., that heat is actually becoming a consideration in terms of, you know, whether companies are going to move there or not. Again, it's only one consideration. It's not the dominant one yet, but it's starting to be factored in. So you're going to see that with some calculations when it comes to sea level rise or storm exposure. Yeah, definitely. I expect that to happen. I also know that there are cities in the northern parts of the U.S. in the Rust Belt that are thinking about this very hard in terms of using their location as a way to potentially attract some of the industry that they lost over the past few decades.
You know, I used to be more of a doomer. I thought that the system might crash at any time. But now it seems like this is a very diverse and capable system of just sort of rerouting things and rebuilding and keeping itself going, even maybe in directions where it shouldn't as far as the climate goes. But I don't know if it's too far out to picture a climate migrant camps. That is surely coming for Bangladesh. It's a reality for millions of refugees in the Sahel part of North Africa, I think. But in the U.S., U.K., or Canada, Is it just that these climate retreat camps seem super unlikely, or is it just hard to imagine now? We just had tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people in temporary shelters in Florida, and some of their homes are demolished, so they're not going back. I don't know what happens to people after these big events.
I don't think it's unrealistic. I think, you know, it's really just a really question of time. And I think, as you noted quite rightly, it has happened in different degrees. And you can also look in, it'll happen in different populations sooner rather than later. But I absolutely do think so. I'm not what you call a doomer right now. I think the system is resilient, but I think things break down and such. And I think we're at the very early stages. We're at the really the beginning of things. So the past 5 years, we've started to see events where what ordinary people look at and say, boy, that's unusual. And we're at the very start. So I personally, if I have to bet on this, I think we're probably in decades to come, and maybe sooner than some people think. It's a vision. I have this almost vision in my head about former McMansion residents, upper middle class people, you know, ending up in, you know, camps and soup lines in a camp in, say, Manitoba or Maine someday, and being really confused about what happened even then. I think it's been very easy to kind of dismiss this when it's just somebody in Bangladesh or a native village in Alaska, and it's a curiosity and such. And then later on, we see, you know, high school starting to close in, you know, rural Louisiana parishes, simply because people are moving in an unmanaged way. And again, we sort of classify that as, oh, that's something to think about. But I think, you know, when it does hit, and I do think there will be places that, again, the good upper middle class people, the secure people who've done everything right in the system, I think they're going to get impacted. And I think it's going to come as a real shock. And there'll be repercussions in political ways as well. And I can't predict what they are, but I do think it's coming. I just don't know when.
Patrick Marchman has a degree from the University of Michigan. You can find his network at www.climmigration.org or find links in my weekly show blog at ecoshock.org. Patrick, thank you for sharing with our listeners.
Thank you so much.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
If you have a story idea or thoughts on something you've heard, contact us, radio@ecoshock.org. That's radio@ecoshock.org.